Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.
It's a big world.
Oh, wow! It's so bright.
And it's full of small businesses.
Isn't getting discounts great?
Yes!
Yeah, I got carried away.
Risk. Reward. Opportunity, responsibility. Small business drives our economy. And finally, there's a show talking about it. Think you can be your own boss? Stick around. You'll find out.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Here's Austin Hill.
This is the place where small business owners and independent workers come to talk every weekend. I am Austin Hill. Welcome to our world. We call it Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Take down our number and join us. It's toll-free, 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. We are open for business with your questions and comments about business and work and how to find work even if you can't quote-unquote get a job. How do you make a living in a sometimes tough, sluggish economy? We try to see all these very important issues, all these things that connect to the most intimate parts of our lives. We see them through the lenses of scriptural truth, through the lenses of our Christian faith. 877-933-2484 is our number. 877-933-2484. We're open for business, and I'm ready for your questions and comments. Love to hear from you. My question for you in this episode of our program is simply this. Should a child's education include business and economics education? And should we talk about these things in the church? Should a child's education, a child's upbringing involve business and economics education? And should we be talking about business and work and economics in the church? Kind of a twofold question, I suppose, but I want to get your reaction to that. Won't you join us? 877-933-2484 is our number. 877-933-2484. Coming up later this hour, we'll talk about some steps one can take if you're thinking about starting a business. We'll run through what I call, and we have this available on our program website at austinsbigworld.com, the Business Owner's Readiness Quiz. I had a gentleman who's a business consultant out in California, a gentleman named Mark Anderson. He runs a very fascinating career website called careernav.com, N-A-V, careernav.com. And some time ago, Mark Anderson is a friend of mine. Some time ago, I asked Mark to craft what he would call a prism, or what I thought of as sort of a prism of questions that we should all ask ourselves before we take the leap and try to, quote-unquote, start a business. We'll go through the Business Owner's Readiness Quiz coming up later this hour. Also, if we have time for it, I want to talk about some of the best franchise businesses in America here at the start of 2015. And it might be kind of an eye-opening experience. So often we see people, we hear people protesting big corporate entities and insisting that large corporations are ruling our lives and such. And sometimes that's a very legitimate, very real concern. And I'm with you on that. But you might be surprised at how many small businesses in your local area, while they display a large corporate logo or an internationally known corporately owned name, you know, big publicly traded corporation like McDonald's, for example, McDonald's restaurants, global company, right? But you might be surprised to know how many of those entities are owned, at least majority ownership, by local people in your communities. It may very well be people in your church. So we'll talk about franchise businesses in America and much more just ahead. 877-933-2484 is the number. 877-933-2484. My question for you in this episode of our program, should a child's education include business and economics education, and should we educate about business and economics in the church? Now, that may sound crazy to you, but I'm here to tell you the Bible itself, the Holy Bible, is replete with wisdom and information about economics and about work, if only we are to look for it. I like to start with the book of Proverbs, for example. And, you know, there's this organization. I should find out more about them. You may know more about it than I do, but it's a nonprofit group called Proverbs 31 Ministries. Proverbs 31 Ministries. And this is a ministry to women in many ways. And I hear some of their commentaries from time to time on Christian talk radio stations and such. It's quite good. And I appreciate what they do. Again, I don't know a whole lot about this organization in and of itself. But have you ever stopped to read that entire chapter of the Bible, Proverbs 31? I mean, it's a beautiful chapter, and a lot of Bible theologians would tell us that the woman that is characterized in Proverbs 31, a lot of people look to that chapter of the Bible and say, well, this is all about what it means to be a virtuous woman. Bible scholars will tell us that the woman that is characterized in Proverbs 31 is really kind of a metaphor for wisdom itself. In fact, some would go so far as to say that the concept, the idea of wisdom, is personified and illustrated as a woman in Proverbs 31. It's a very rich chapter of the Bible, and it's full of wisdom. Look at what the woman that's being characterized in Proverbs 31 is doing. She's working! She's a business owner. She's out in the marketplace. She makes her wares and sells them to the open public and then returns home to her family and cares for her children and husband and whatnot. I mean, this is like the prototype, if you will, for a working woman, if there ever was one. It's right there in Proverbs 31. That's a nice starting point. And then you move on from there. You look at what ancient Israel had to say about working and doing resourceful and productive things with the land that God had given to them. And those who had plenty being generous with those who had not enough. By the way, that whole idea of caring for the poor, as it's characterized in the Old Testament, with the wealthier landowners giving freely of the crops that they produced to people who didn't have adequate food and resources and such. Notice what's going on there. That's replete through much of the Old Testament. Notice what's going on there. It wasn't just hey, here's some free food. What happened in ancient Israel, as recorded in multiple chapters of the Old Testament, is that the landowners opened up their fields and told the poor among them, you can go out and pick your own food. That is to say that the impoverished in the ancient Israel culture, before the diaspora and so forth, the culture was such that the poor were expected to participate in their own recovery. Yes, God compelled the people with resources to be generous, but those who needed to avail themselves to that generosity, they're expected to go out and make some effort to help themselves. So that's just a little sidebar there. But again, what I'm saying here is that there is just a ton of wisdom, rich information, wisdom, if you will, about business and the economy throughout the Old and New Testament. And in some cases, it's wisdom on what not to do with your resources, how not to handle your finances, how not to invest yourself in business and career and so forth. The Scripture is replete with wisdom, if only we'll search for it. Again, my question for you in this episode of our program, should a child's education, and this is profoundly important, I think, for those of us who are parents or grandparents or both, should a child's education include education in the ways of business and economics? And should we begin talking about those kinds of things in our churches? 877-933-2484 is our number. 877-933-2484. Now we'll get to phones here in just a moment. I want to, speaking of the education of children, I want to play a couple of sound bites here for you. That's just fascinating. I don't know much about the people involved here, but something quite fascinating indeed happened. I believe this was yesterday, Friday, on CNBC, the cable channel that delivers business and financial news information. You know, they do some of their telecasts during the weekday, live from the New York Stock Exchange and all that kind of stuff. And I enjoy them. Not everybody does, but I enjoy what they do and find it useful information. Well, let me tell you just a little bit about this young man, 16-year-old entrepreneur named Chase Reed. Chase, spelled just like it sounds, R-E-E-D, Chase Reed. 16-year-old young man, he lives in Harlem. in the inner city of New York City. And I've seen some news reports about this young man. He actually owns a business. He started a business. He now has a storefront in Harlem, New York City. And he is a shoe reseller. How odd is that, right? He actually takes brand name, you know, really high-class sneakers, and he resells them. And he's making a small fortune doing this. And he employs people. And so this 16-year-old kid, and he has employees, right? Well, the adults, the grown adults, the Wall Street investor class experts on CNBC, they invited Chase Reed to come sit in on the set there at the Stock Exchange. And they kind of sat around saying, what's going on here? You resell shoes? This is kind of weird. Now, here's in this soundbite, you'll hear one of the anchors of CNBC. He says, I'd like Chase to give my son a job. I have a son that's 15 years old. Who's 15 years old? Chase, will you give him a job? And Chase has just a brilliant response to that. Anyway, this is part one, this 16-year-old shoe reseller entrepreneur talking to the Wall Street experts. Part one, roll it, please.
Well, I'm actually launching my own sneaker line, and I also have been customizing sneakers for the last 2 years. So that's something I'm very interested in.
You're 16 years old.
I'm 16 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
My son is 15. I want Chase to give him a job. I'm going to be calling Chase real soon.
Oh, he could be one of my investors.
Isn't that, what, isn't that fun? I don't want to give him a job. He can invest in my company. He can be part owner in my company. We need more of that kind of that guts, that kind of ambition, that kind of courage, that kind of wisdom among young kids. Hey, he doesn't want just a job. He wants to be an owner with me. Come work with me in this enterprise. Anyway, the discussion goes from there. Another one of the anchors at CNBC says to Chase Reed, now, wait a minute, this is it's kind of a generational gap here. This just seems kind of crazy. You're reselling shoes, you know, you buy shoes for $100 and you resell them for $300. And, you know, what kind of business is that? Chase Reed, the 16-year-old inner city entrepreneur from Harlem, New York, says that's kind of how things go on the stock exchange. Hello. Listen to this interchange.
All right. There's a little generation gap going on here because, in my opinion, like the idea of selling or buying used sneakers is kind of crazy. Except the other day when my son came down and told me that he had sold a pair of sneakers that I bought him for like $100-something for like $300 on, like, this is no big deal for you.
The sneakers come out at retail, but they end up going for a lot more because they end up selling out. And it's like the stock market down here where you can come in,
IPO.
You can trade stocks just like you can trade sneakers. You can sell shares just like you can sell sneakers.
You can sell shares of stock just like you sell sneakers. Now, some will listen to this and say, but this is crazy. People paying $100, $200, $300 for a pair of sports shoes, sneakers. I get that concern. I don't live that way. That's not reasonable to me. However, this is a really smart young man. And guess what is a product? What is its value? Well, what are people worth willing to pay for? What is it worth to others who would like to have that product? It's real basic economic stuff. And here these middle-aged, I dare say, and this is true, all white middle-aged experts on Wall Street say, now, how does this work? And here's a 16-year-old young man tutoring the experts. Hey, this is how basic economics works. There's something good, something virtuous about that. And we can tie that to the basic wisdom on economy that runs replete throughout the Old and New Testament, quite frankly. Should we educate children in the ways of business and economics, and should we talk about that in our churches? Tell me what you think. It's 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Back in moments, you're listening to Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business.
This is the place where entrepreneurial minds meet. You're listening to Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. This is the show for business owners of today and tomorrow. You're listening to Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business.
Thank you for being here. I am on this great radio station that you're listening to every weekend at this same time. You can always find our archived audio, by the way, at myfaithradio.com. That's our network carrier, the Faith Radio Network. It's Austin Hills Big World, the small business, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Coming up later this hour, the Business Owner's Readiness Quiz. How ready are you to own and operate a business? What does that business look like? We'll get to some of those details coming up later in this hour. Should a child's education involve education in the ways of business and economics? And should we talk about business and economics in the church? I am a person that's passionately convicted of this reality that the scriptures, the Old and New Testament, are replete with wisdom on business and the economy and admonitions to work if only we look for them. I mentioned earlier this hour the notion of the virtuous woman as characterized in Proverbs 31. Well, the virtuous woman in Proverbs 31 is on some level a businesswoman. Then we get to the Old Testament. We look at what the Apostle Paul wrote to his understudy Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 5. Some very strong admonitions. If a man doesn't work to provide his family, he is like he's lost the faith. We see in Paul's letter to the Thessalonians, where he talks about people working so they don't become a burden to the church, working and running a business, as it were, to provide for their own families. We see what he wrote in 1 Corinthians about the necessity of work. And work and productivity, using the resources, the land, for good, productive purposes, it's present, I would say, throughout the scriptures. Should we start talking about these things again in the church? It's 877-933-2484. Dave is up next. Dave, welcome to Austin Hills Big World of Small Business. Hello.
Hi. Yes. We need to talk about it in the church.
Tell me.
Thanks for bringing that up and for your stance on it. And the scriptures that you just mentioned are spot on. I can't tell you how many times I've shared with my kids and with friends Paul, my paraphrase of Paul's words: you don't work, you don't eat.
Mm-hmm.
There is definitely a time for parents and those in authority and with stewardship of youngsters to take care of them, and then to get them ready to be functioning, competent, contributing members of society. And I think, to kind of, you know, take your point one step further, yes, students' education should include finances and economics and business, and it should be made as realistic as possible. But it should also include education of the finance and economics involved in education. And what I'm getting at is this whole thing about free community college. And the vice president being in California talking about, I think he said something like, the best-kept secret is the community college system. Well, no, I beg to disagree. The best-kept secret is how the federal government gouges the middle class to tax them to pay for people to have free community college. We need to educate our young people in understanding, you know, there is no free lunch. There's nothing that's free. If you're getting something, unless it's part of a, you know, like a charitable operation from a nonprofit, or there's a very wealthy benefactor who's taking care of this, it's coming from your neighbor. It's coming from the businesses that you patronize, because they're paying the taxes for you to get free stuff. And that can't keep going on. And unless we intervene in the current generation, I don't know how long it's going to take, but unless we intervene and start educating that, and maybe making the education a little bit realistic, a little bit uncomfortable with allowances and, you know, incentive-based allowances. I don't know. I don't have a line on that that whole market, and I don't want to get into parenting strategies and shooting on people and that sort of thing. But I just think it's crucial, and especially where we have, you know, our God owns the cattle of 1,000 hills. He owns it all. Mm-hmm. You know, everything in the heavens and earth is yours, O Lord, and this is your kingdom. We adore you as being in control of everything. Riches and glory come from you alone, and you're the ruler of all mankind. If we truly believe that, we better be teaching it to our kids, and we got to start now. And I'll take a breath. Thanks, Austin.
Dave, I appreciate the call. Take a deep breath, and thanks for listening to us here on Austin Hills Big World of Small Business. He's touching on a lot of important issues there. I don't know about the vice president visiting California and talking about free community college education. I will tell you that I am a product of a California community college. I came out of high school. I'm a native of California, and I came out of high school and had kind of a rough home situation. I'm not to lay blame on mom. mom a dad or dismiss myself from responsibilities, but there are lots of potentially dangerous things going on, quite frankly, with my father at that time in my life. I felt responsible to try to take care of my father and my parents as best as I could. And the idea of enrolling right away into a university was a bit overwhelming. I was kind of unfocused and quite immature. And a community college enabled me at a ridiculously low cost to me. I think at the time, the California Community College system charged $8 per year. Unit. $8 per unit of college education that eventually transferred into a state university where I got an undergrad degree and went on to graduate school and such. I will tell you, as much as this notion of, you know, community college should be free, and back in the early 1980s when I was in a California college paying $8 per unit of tuition, there were students at that time protesting, demanding that $8 per unit was too high. So, just to put a little perspective on it, it never ends. But indeed, shouldn't it be the case that a part of our children's education should get back to basics in Scripture on business and economics, and we should lead them to this reality that none of this stuff is free. None of it. Nothing is free, not long term. Should a child's education involve business and economics education, and should we talk about these things in the church? That's my question for you. We're open for your questions and comments. 877-933-2484. I'm Austin Hill. Back in moments.
We're on the road to economic recovery, and we're headed towards your future. Now back to Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business.
Thank you for being here. Our number is 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. You're listening to Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. We are open for business with your questions and comments about business ownership and work and making a living even if you can't find a job, providing for ourselves and our households in difficult times. We try to see these issues through the lenses of our Christian faith. We're open for business with your questions and comments. My question for you is simply this. Should a child's education involve instruction on business and economics, and should we talk about business and economics in our churches? Sounds kind of crazy, I know, at least on some level, but I'll suggest to you in a moment here ways in which we kind of talk around issues of business and economics. We place expectations on business owners without really calling them what they are. We'll get to that in just a few moments. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. If you just joined us, I played this audio earlier in the hour, but it bears repeating. A young man named Chase Reed, who is a 16-year-old teenage young man living in Harlem, New York City, has started this this very successful shoe reselling business. He has a storefront in of all places, Harlem. And he actually takes high-end sneakers and resells them for more than he pays for them. Now, some people would look at that and say, "Well, you know, you're just kind of spinning things. You know, it's almost like home resellers. You know, you buy a house only for the purpose of spinning it off for a higher price and making some money on short order." Well, there is a sense in which that is the case. But what is the value of a particular pair of sneakers? Well, the value is determined in no small part by what's another person willing to pay for it. That's real basic economic wisdom. And this young man, this kid, although I prefer to call him a young man, this young man, Chase Reed, understands that. Now, do I think it's kind of crazy to pay $100, $200, $300 for a pair of sneakers? Yeah, I do, quite frankly. I mean, I can understand maybe $100 for some really great running shoes or athletic shoes if you are a serious athlete and you need some very careful, specific protection for your feet, or work boots or something like that. But all of that aside, this young man understands something very basic, as I said, about the economy. Well, he shows up on the set of CNBC, the Business and Financial News cable channel, and they are live at the New York Stock Exchange. And this one of the anchors says, "Now wait a minute, we got a little generational disconnect here. What's going on? You sell shoes for more than you pay for them. What's up with that?" Listen to how that conversation unfolded. Roll it, please.
All right, there's a little generation gap going on here because, in my opinion, like, the idea of selling or buying used sneakers is kind of crazy. Except the other day when my son came down and told me that he had sold a pair of sneakers that I bought him for like $100-something for like $300 on. Like, this is no big deal for you.
The sneakers come out at retail, but they end up going for a lot more because they end up selling out. And it's like the stock market down here where you can come in,
IPO.
You can trade stocks just like you can trade sneakers. You can sell shares just like you can sell sneakers.
You can sell shares of stock just like you can sell sneakers. Yes, you most certainly can. By the way, if you look at this and say, well, this is crazy, paying $300 for used sneakers, well, consider the actual value of a share of stock that you're buying. It's difficult to determine exactly what that is beyond whatever the value of the price is of that stock at any given time, right? But just simply buying a share of stock or buying into a mutual fund for that matter, I mean, doesn't that kind of call into question? If we're going to analyze the real value in the world of sneakers, which is a very legitimate thing to do, shouldn't we also evaluate the real value to the world of a share of, I don't know, whatever the hottest tech stock is? I won't name any. My point is that sometimes valuations on these things, the price that is set, the amount of money that people are willing to pay for something, may be kind of a little off the chart, a little excessive relative to the value of what that company actually does. Just a little sidebar there, not to complicate things. But this is a young teenage man. I just find this fascinating. This young African-American kid from inner city New York tutoring the experts on Wall Street on how these things actually work. And it's a very hopeful sign to me. I'd like to think that we can engender this kind of discussion about business and the economy and really go back to the scriptures, even in our churches, and say, look how the Israelites lived. Look at what they were compelled to and called to do in terms of work. Not only were they called to adhere to strict sets of rules, to be very worshipful of their God and marry within their own lineage and those kinds of things, they were also compelled to use the God-given resources that they had at their hand, which in ancient civilizations, that meant the land, the earth, and what you could grow on it. There was no industrial complex back then. There was no global trade, things that we understand as commonplace today. But I'd like to think that we could go back to the basics here and look to the scriptures and say this informs or should inform the way we view business ownership and work and the economy today. It's there, if only we'll look for it. 877-933-2484 is our number. 877-933-2484. We'll get back to the phones in just a few moments. Imagine there would be somebody in your life, perhaps somebody in your family, maybe it's somebody in your church. And they've always had a dream of starting a business. Maybe they're at wit's end. And maybe this is you, by the way. I hear from listeners to this program quite frequently who say, you know, that you're describing me here. Maybe this is you. You're frustrated with a lack of job availability. You've applied for a lot of jobs. Maybe you're in a job and it just seems to be kind of a dead-end thing and it's not exciting and not exhilarating anymore. And you've always had this idea, what would it be like to actually own and operate my own business? Well, I'll tell you, we have published at austinsbigworld.com, that's our program website, what I have entitled the Business Owner's Readiness Quiz. And it's a little, just a self-guided quiz that you can take for yourself. Actually, it's just a series of questions that you can ask for yourself. I think that the best way to do this quiz, as it were, is to get with an accountability partner, a mentor, if you will. Maybe it's a spiritual director, if you want to call it that. Somebody who holds you accountable in all areas of your life. And get real honest and answer the questions for yourself, first and foremost, but also in the context of that other person. I also encourage people to actually put this on paper. That is the most difficult, challenging thing for me, to not just look at probative questions and, you know, answer them in my own head. We can all do that. But actually writing it down on paper or on the computer screen in front of you, that's a very unnerving, uncomfortable sort of experience. But in my experience, as much as I resist it, as much as I don't like it, it's really, really necessary. But if you get to austinsbigworld.com, and I will post a link to this on our Big World of Small Business Facebook page as well. If you get to our program website, you can find the Business Owner's Readiness Quiz. Let me just run through some of these before we get back to your calls. Question number one, why do you want to start your own business? I mean, a lot of us have this passion, this dream, this vision. Probably most all of us need and want to earn money, okay? Dreams and passion and vision are necessary, but they are not sufficient qualifiers for starting a business. And in my experience, I've seen this happen to others. I've seen this in my own life, and most experts will tell you, if your immediate focus right now is just making money, plunging into business ownership might not be the appropriate next step. Something to think about. You have to ask yourself, question one, why do you want to start your own business? Number two, think about your worst case scenario in owning and operating a business. If you start your business and it fails, what is the worst thing that could happen? The vast majority of business startups do fail, by the way. That's always been the case. Business ownership and operation is in many ways kind of a trial and error sort of thing. I'm sure a lot of pastors in churches would agree that sometimes ministry is kind of a trial and error thing. We try things, and they're going out to serve a particular people group or to a particular part of the community or the population, and there's no clear pathway on how to do it. Okay, well, that's for-profit business ownership. It is in many ways that same way. What's the worst thing that can happen if it all collapses for you? Now, if you lose some money, but you pick up the pieces and you move on after a business collapses, you say, I'll retool my career, I'll go get another job, what have you. Then that's probably an acceptable response. If, when being real honest with a mentor and yourself and perhaps your husband or wife, if you're married, if you say, you know, the business collapses and I'm going to lose my home. If the business collapses, my kids won't love me anymore, or my spouse will leave me. Well, if it's a high-stakes answer that you give to that question, what's the worst thing could happen if this collapses? Maybe business ownership is not quite right. If it's, we pick up the pieces and move on, okay, that's probably a green light. Question number three, do you have at least 6 months of savings built up in addition to what you think the business launch will cost you? Business launches almost always cost somewhere between 20 and 50% more than what the best laid business plan estimates. So given that, do you have at least half a year's revenues saved up to pay your bills if the business collapses? Those are three of several questions on the Business Owner's Readiness Quiz. Again, you can find that at austinsbigworld.com. We'll post a link to this on our Facebook page as well. But pastors, grab it. Talk with your parishioners. Talk with church members about this. If indeed entrepreneurship and business ownership is something of interest and a subject of inquiry in your church. That's some good food for thought written by myself and a consultant with careernav.com. Some things to think about before we jump. Here's the number. It's 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. We're open for business with your questions and comments about small business ownership, being an independent worker, being an entrepreneur, and how these things match up with our Christian faith. How does our Christian faith inform these issues? I'm here for your questions and comments. My question for you, should a child's education involve basic instruction on business and economics? And should we be talking about these things, maybe even teaching these things in our churches? 877-933-2484. Back in moments, you're listening to Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Don't go away.
Hey, don't mind us. We're just talking about the most important part of the American economy. This is Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. You want to talk about job creation? We're creating our own jobs right here. This is Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business.
That's what entrepreneurs do, actually. By the way, in just a few moments, some statistics to pass along about the rates of new businesses in our culture. And I know, again, this may seem like kind of foreign discussion, foreign terrain for Christians and even for Christian radio, but the reality is we have to, a society has to have new business startups going on an ongoing basis in order to survive. And I think Christians in the body of Christ should have a care and concern about the survival of the country that we live in. That's just me. 877-933-2484. It's Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Jennifer, up next in Wisconsin, welcome to our program. Hello.
Hello. I was thinking about the fact that I did not have the opportunity to study business in high school. It was either academic track or business track. Or an industrial track. And so business, I was listening to you and regretting the fact that I had not had that opportunity, which got me thinking about how interesting it would be to teenagers. You could even secularize this. These biblical principles would really hold true in a classroom, whether they're taught at a Christian school or a secular school. For example, the proper ethical treatment of employees. Imagine being a teenager and being taught that you need to treat, from the biblical principles, masters, how do you treat your slaves? And they could be taught that the employee deserves ethical and proper treatment. Of course, they would eat that up. How about the principle of reaping and sowing? That when you sow, you reap. And if you sow diligently, I think that the teenagers would begin to understand the principle of hard work. The borrower is a servant to the lender. I think that young kids get into credit card debt as soon as they're able to get a credit card because they haven't taught that you are a servant to the lender. I think that honoring the Lord with your wealth is an important principle. Being generous as a business person is also a principle that is not taught. And finally, I think they could learn investments. I came across this proverb, precious oil and treasure are in a wise man's dwelling, but a foolish man devours it. I had not seen that proverb that way. So certainly investment could be something that is taught. I think it's very valuable for business and economics to be taught to students.
I do, too. Have you seen examples of how this happens in the context of a church? Does it go on in your church? Does it happen in churches in your community? Any observation of that?
No, I have not seen that this is taught to the young people. I don't have anyone in youth groups. I don't know what goes on there, but I think that I would know if something that exciting was going on in the youth group. I do know that Christian businesses throughout my community, Christian business people, they do like to be their own independent entrepreneurs as opposed to working for somebody else.
Right.
And so it's very fashionable to talk about your business and encourage other people to join you in whatever you're selling or purchase from you. But no, teaching is not. I think you asked a very good question today.
Yeah. Well, listen, thank you for listening, and great to have you with us in Wisconsin. Thank you for being with us here on Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business from the Faith Radio Network. She's saying a lot, and as she's describing the issues surrounding the matter of business ethics. Well, there is, I believe, and I ascribe to this line of thinking, all truth is God's truth, ultimately. Whether it's articulated specifically as coming from our God, our Creator, or not. If it's true, especially timeless ethical and moral principles, they ultimately trace back to God. And if you want to talk about the proper treatment of workers in the workplace, the proper treatment of employees, let's have that conversation. I think we can very courageously, as Christians, engage in that discussion, even with people who are not necessarily Christian believers. Because you know what? At the end of the day, as you continue in this process of talking about that which is good, that which is virtuous, that which is proper and appropriate, all those categories, good, true, proper, appropriate, all those categories, virtue itself, those things beg the question, according to whom? Certain kinds of practices in business are appropriate according to whom? Treating an employee this way is virtuous and good according to whom? My point is, and this is a little off topic from our business discussion, but business has a whole lot to do with this. My point is that it becomes impossible to define what is good and what is bad apart from God's truth. And that's really the foundation where morality and ethics rests on, and it's true in business as well. And the more that people question, well, you know, this kind of behavior is deemed to be good and virtuous. This seems to be when you pay competitively in the workplace and you encourage your employee and you tell them you're doing a good job, you give them the proper training, you give them the proper correction when they're off course. These kinds of principles seem to produce the best results. It makes for a happy worker. It makes for a productive workplace. These ideas seem to be working. Where do they come from? Well, ultimately, all those things I just mentioned are very scriptural, very biblical. They apply to the business owner and the worker. They apply to the parent and the child. They apply to just about every area of our lives and every relationship in our lives. So having these conversations, even with non-believers, and talking about business ethics and morality, bring it on. Bring it on. I believe Christians can do this with confidence, even if somebody does not agree with us right from the get-go as to who our God, who our Creator is, or even if there is a God, or even if we have an eternal Creator. These discussions about business and morality ultimately beg the question, where do these good ideas come from? And they don't just come from human beings. Thank you, Jen, again for that call and for your point here. On the issue of job creation and business startups, we have a growing problem in our country here in the United States. And if you're listening to us in one of the Canadian provinces, this is not quite as much of a problem for you. Dynamics in Canada are very different. The population is much smaller than it is here in the United States. So on one of these kinds of issues, we're kind of worlds apart, if you will. But there is a problem with insufficient numbers of business startups. Now, for an economy to continue to remain robust, you need new business startups on a pretty much continual ongoing basis. We are nearing a decades-old low in terms of the number of startups per year. 2014 was not a good year for new business startups. 2014 marked the fourth year in a row that we had more businesses shut down and fail than we had new businesses start up. And nobody really knows how long we can continue in this path, on this pathway, in this pattern here in the United States, without some very serious, painful repercussions. Now, I would maintain we're already feeling serious repercussions with the lack of job availability, with, in some cases, a poor work ethic among those who do have employment positions, and a growing problem of complete disinterest in even working at all. That's something we talked about last weekend here on this program, Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Should it be the case that work is regarded as a biblical mandate? I don't see how you can read the scriptures and take them seriously without agreeing, yes, God wants able-bodied, healthy, of-age people to be working as best as they can, providing for themselves and their families and their dependents as best they can. But I don't think there's even universal agreement on that in our country. Then you look at the rate of business creation in our nation. It's at a dangerous low. We can't just entrust the politicians to figure this out for us. We can't just continue saying, oh, yes, the politicians will create jobs. The politicians will save us from this. I believe the answer is found in scriptures, and it needs to come from our churches. How we go forward with life-sustaining work and opportunity for ourselves and younger generations. Thanks for listening. I'm Austin Hill. Reach me at austinsbigworld.com. Find our program audio at myfaithradio.com. We'll see you next weekend. This is Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. Have a great week ahead. Hey, thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business. For more information about this, you can visit the Austin Hill's Big World of Small Business program page on myfaithradio.com.